So, before we just moved, I was curious about, like, on the one hand you talk about, let's say, a kind of Shakespearean influence on your interest in fonts, but on the other hand you talk about working in a company doing HTML editors at the time you actually start thinking about this tool. So
yes.
Do you think that is present in your, the web is somehow present in how FontForge works, or how fonts work, or how you think about fonts?
I don't think the web had much to do with my, well, that's not true. Okay, when I was working on the HTML editor, we, at the time, mid-90s, there weren't any Unicode fonts. And so part of the reason I was writing all these scripts to add accents and get type 0 support in PostScript, which is what you need for a Unicode font, was because I needed a Unicode font for our HTML product. To that extent, yes, it had an effect. Aside from that, not really. The web has certainly allowed me to distribute it. Without the web, I doubt anyone really would know. I wouldn't have any idea how to market it, if that's the right word for something that doesn't get paid for. But and certainly the web has provided a convenient infrastructure to do the documentation in. But as for font design itself, that certainly has not affected me. Maybe with this Creative Commons talk that John Phillips was giving, there may well be, at some point, a button that you can press so that you can upload your fonts to the Open Font Library. But I haven't gotten there yet, so I don't want to promise that.
No, I mean, because indeed that was hearing you speak about CC Host, that's the mm-hmm. the software we're talking about, or the
that's what the Open Font Library uses, yes.
Yeah. And the connection to FontForge could change, of course, the way, not only how you distribute fonts, but maybe also how you design fonts.
It might. I don't know. I don't have a view of the future. I guess to some extent, obviously, font design has been affected by having it to be displayed on a small screen with a low resolution display. And there are all kinds of hacks in modern font formats for dealing with low resolution stuff. PostScript calls them hints, and TrueType calls them instructions, and they're different approaches to the same thing, but that certainly has affected font design in the last, well, since PostScript came out. The web itself, I don't think that has yet been a significant influence on font design, but then I'm no longer a designer. I discovered I was much better at designing font editors than at designing fonts. So I've given up on that aspect of things.
Okay, because I'm curious about you making that sort of division between being a designer or being a font editor maker.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, but that's in my sort of vague definition of maker, these two things might be very related.
Well, they are. And, you know, I only got into doing it because the tools that were available to me were not adequate. But I have found since that I'm not adequate at doing the design. There are many people who are better at designing than designing fonts than I am. And I like to design fonts, but I've made some very ugly ones at times. And so I think I will just I'll do that occasionally, but that's not where I'm going to make a mark.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly now, I just don't have the font editor itself takes up so much of my time that I don't have the energy, the enthusiasm, or anything like that to devote to another major creative project. And designing a font is a major creative project.
But can we talk about the major creative project of designing a font editor?
Okay.
I mean, because I'm curious how how that is a creative project for you, how you look at that.
I look at it as a puzzle. And someone comes up to me with a problem, and I try and figure out how to solve it. And sometimes I don't want to figure out how to solve it, but I feel I should anyway. And sometimes I don't want to figure out how to solve it, and I don't. That's one of the glories of being one's own boss. You don't have to do everything that you're asked. To me, it's just a problem. It's a fascinating problem. But why is it fascinating? That's just me. No one else probably finds it fascinating. Or the guys who design Font Lab probably also find it fascinating. There are two or three other font design programs in the world, and they would also find it fascinating. But
can you give an example of something you would find fascinating?
Well,
Dave
Crossland, who was sitting behind me at the end today, was talking to me today. He sat down. We started talking after lunch, but on the way up the stairs. At first he was complaining that FontForge isn't written with a standard widget set. So it looks different from everything else. And yes, it does. And I don't care, because this isn't something which interests me. On the other hand, he was saying that what he also wanted was a paragraph level display of the font, so that as he made changes in the font, he could see a ripple effect in the paragraph. Now, I have a thing which does a word level display, but it doesn't do multi-lines. It does multi-lines if you're doing Japanese, but it doesn't do multi-columns. So it's either one vertical row or one horizontal row of glyphs. And I do also have a paragraph level display, but it's static. And you bring it up, and it takes the current snapshot of the font and generates a real TrueType font, and then passes it off to the X Windows rasterizer. It passes it off to the standard Linux toolchain as that static font and asks that toolchain to display text. So what he's saying is, okay, do that, but update the font that you pass off every now and then. And yeah, that'd be interesting to do. That's an interesting project to work on. Much more interesting than changing my widget set, which is just a lot of work and tedious, because there's nothing to think about. It's just, okay, I got to use this widget instead of my widget. My widget does exactly what I want now, because I designed it that way. How do I make this thing, which I didn't design, which I don't know anything about, do exactly what I want? And that's a doubt for me.
Yeah.
Dave, on the other hand, is very hopeful that he'll find some poor fool who'll take that on as a wonderful opportunity. And if he does, that would be great, because not having a standard widget set is one of the biggest complaints people have, because FontForge doesn't look like anything else. And people say, well, the gray background, it used to have a gray background, now has a white background, is very scary. I thought it was normal to have a gray background, but that's why we now have a white background. The white background may be equally scary, but no one's complained about it yet.
Try red.
I tried blue, light blue and cream.
One of them, I was told, gave people migraines. I don't remember specifically what the comment was about the light blue. But
it's configurable.
I'm sorry?
Make it configurable.
Oh, it is configurable, but
yeah.
No one configures it.
Yeah, I know.
So.
It's 11, but stuff is configurable.
So you talked about spending a lot of time on this project. How does that work? You get up in the morning and start working on FontForge, or?
Well, I do many things. Some mornings, yes, I get up in the morning and I start working on FontForge, and I cook breakfast in the background and eat breakfast and work on FontForge. Some mornings I get up at 4 in the morning and go out running for a couple of hours and come back home and sort of collapse and eat a little bit and go off to yoga class and do a Pilates class and do another yoga class and then go to my pottery class and go to the farmer's market and come home and I haven't worked on FontForge at all. So it varies according to the day. but yes, there was a period when I was spending 40, 50 hours a week working on FontForge. I don't spend that much time on it now. It's more like 20 hours. Though the last month, I got all excited about the release that I put out last Tuesday. Today's Sunday. And so I was working really hard. Probably got up to 30 hours in some of that time. But it was a really exciting change. All kinds of things were different. I put in Python scripting, which people had been asking for. Well, I'm glad I've done it, but it was actually kind of boring, that bit. But the stuff that came before was fascinating.
Mike?
Are you familiar with the OpenType spec? No. Okay. The way you specify ligatures and kerning in OpenType can be looked at several different levels. And the way OpenType wants you to look at it, I felt was unnecessarily complicated. So I didn't look at it at that level. And then after about 5 years of looking at it that way, I discovered that the reason I thought it was unnecessarily complicated was because I was only used to Latin or Cyrillic or Greek text. And for Latin, Cyrillic, and Greek, it probably is unnecessarily complicated. But for Indic languages, it is not unnecessarily complicated, and you need all those things. So I ripped out all of the code for specifying strange glyph conversions. You know, in Arabic, a glyph looks different at the beginning of the word, and so on. So that's also handled in this area. And I ripped all that stuff out and redid it in the way that OpenType wanted it to be done, and not the somewhat simplified but not sufficiently powerful method that I'd been using up till then. And that I found quite fascinating. And then once I'd done that, it opened up all kinds of little things that I could change that made the font editor itself better.
That's almost Dutch.
And so after I'd done that, well, the display I talked about, which could show a word, I realized that I should redo that to take advantage of what I'd done. And so I redid that, and it's now much more usable. It now shows, at least I hope it shows, more of what people want to see when they're working with these transformations that can apply on the font. There's now a list of the various transformations that can be enabled at any time, and then it goes through and does them. Whereas before, it just sort of, well, it did kerning, and if you asked it to, it would substitute this glyph so you could see what it looked like, but it was all sort of half-baked. And it wasn't very elegant. And it's much better now. And I'm quite proud of that.
Okay.
It may crash, but it's much better.
So you bring up half-baked. When we met, we talked about bread baking.
Oh, yes.
And the pleasure of handling a material to mm-hmm. the point you know it well, not to maybe make reliable bread, meaning that it comes out always the same way, but by your connection to the material, you somehow, it's a pleasure to do mm-hmm. that. So since you've said that, and we then went on talking about pottery and how clay might be the same of the same, mm-hmm. Let's say, give the same kind of pleasure. I've been trying to think, how does Fontforge have that? Does it have that? And where would you find it? Or how is the?
I like to make things. I like to make things that, in some strange definition, are beautiful. I'm not sure how that applies to making bread, but my pots, I think I make beautiful pots, and I really like the glazing I put onto them. It's harder to say that a font editor is beautiful, but I think the ideas behind it are beautiful in my mind, and in some sense, I find the user interface beautiful. I'm not sure that anyone else in the world does, because it's what I want, but I think it's beautiful. And there's a satisfaction in making something that's beautiful. And there's a satisfaction too, as far as the bread goes, in making something I need. I eat my own bread. That's all the bread I eat, except for those few days when I get lazy and don't get to make bread that day and have to put it off till the next day and have to eat something that day. But that doesn't happen very often. So it's just, I like making beautiful things.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That was very nice.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I have pictures of my pots if you'd like to see them.
Yes, I would very much like to see them.
Good.